Chapter 68. Nupkins was not the man to ask a question of the kind twice over, and so, with another preparatory cough, he proceeded, amidst the reverential and admiring silence of the constables, to pronounce his decision. He should fine Weller £2 for the first assault, and £3 for the second. He should fine Winkle £2, and Snodgrass £1, besides requiring them to enter into their own recognizances to keep the peace towards all His Majesty's subjects, and especially towards his leech servant, Daniel Grummer. Pickwick and Tubman he had already held to bail. Immediately on the magistrate ceasing to speak, Mr. Pickwick, with a smile mantling on his again good-humored countenance, stepped forward, and said, "I beg the magistrate's pardon, but may I request a few minutes' private conversation with him, on a matter of deep importance to himself?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the magistrate. Mr. Pickwick repeated his request. "This is a most extraordinary request," apostrophe, said the magistrate. "A private interview?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "a private interview," apostrophe, replied Mr. Pickwick firmly. "Only, as a part of the information which I wish to communicate, is derived from my servant, I should wish him to be present." Apostrophe, the magistrate looked at Mr. Jinks. Mr. Jinks looked at the magistrate. The officers looked at each other in amazement. Mr. Nupkins turned suddenly pale. Could the man Weller, in a moment of remorse, have divulged some secret conspiracy for his assassination? It was a dreadful thought. He was a public man, and he turned paler as he thought of Julius Caesar and Mr. Percival. The magistrate looked at Mr. Pickwick again, and beckoned Mr. Jinks. "What do you think of this request, Mr. Jinks?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, murmured Mr. Nupkins. Mr. Jinks, who didn't exactly know what to think of it, and was afraid he might offend, smiled feebly, after a dubious fashion, and, screwing up the corners of his mouth, shook his head slowly from side to side. Apostrophe, Mr. Jinks, apostrophe, said the magistrate gravely, "you are an ass." Apostrophe, at this little expression of opinion, Mr. Jinks smiled again rather more feebly than before and etched himself, by degrees, back into his own corner. Mr. Nupkins debated the matter within himself for a few seconds, and then, rising from his chair, and requesting Mr. Pickwick and Sam to follow him, led the way into a small room which opened into the justice parlor. Desiring Mr. Pickwick to walk to the upper end of the little apartment, and holding his hand upon the half-closed door, that he might be able to effect an immediate escape, in case there was the least tendency to a display of hostilities, Mr. Nupkins expressed his readiness to hear the communication, whatever it might be. "I will come to the point at once, sir," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "It affects yourself and your credit materially. I have every reason to believe, sir, that you are harboring in your house a gross impostor." Apostrophe, apostrophe, two, apostrophe, interrupted Sam. "Mulberry a gin all natter, for tears and willainy." Apostrophe, apostrophe, Sam, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, "if I am to render myself intelligible to this gentleman, I must beg you to control your feelings." Apostrophe, worry sorry, sir, apostrophe, replied Mr. Weller, "but when I think o' that ere job, I can't help opening the wav a inch or two." Apostrophe, in one word, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, "is my servant right in suspecting that a certain Captain Fitzmarshall is in the habit of visiting here?" "Because," apostrophe, added Mr. Pickwick, as he saw that Mr. Nupkins was about to offer a very indignant interruption, "because if he be, I know that person, to be a apostrophe, hush, hush, apostrophe, said Mr. Nupkins, closing the door. "Know him to be what, sir?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, an unprincipled adventurer, a dishonorable character, a man who preys upon society, and makes easily deceived people his dupes, sir, his absurd, his foolish, his wretched dupes, sir, apostrophe, said the excited Mr. Pickwick. Dear me, apostrophe said Mr. Nupkins, turning very red, and altering his whole manner directly. Dear me, Mr. Apostrophe, Pickwick, apostrophe said Sam. Pickwick, apostrophe said the magistrate, dear me, Mr. Pickwick, pray take a seat, you cannot mean this? Captain Fitzmarshall, apostrophe, don't call him a cap'n, apostrophe said Sam, nor Fitzmarshall neither, he ain't neither one nor t'other. He's a strolling actor, he is, and his name's Jingle, and if ever there was a wolf in a mulberry suit, that ear job trotters him. Apostrophe, it is very true, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, replying to the magistrate's look of amazement. My only business in this town is to expose the person of whom we now speak. Apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick proceeded to pour into the horror-stricken ear of Mr. Nupkins an abridged account of all Mr. Jingle's atrocities. He related how he had first met him, how he had eloped with Miss Wardle, how he had cheerfully resigned the lady for a pecuniary consideration, how he had entrapped himself into a lady's boarding school at midnight, and how he, Mr. Pickwick, now felt it his duty to expose his assumption of his present name and rank. As the narrative proceeded, all the warm blood in the body of Mr. Nupkins tingled up into the very tips of his ears. He had picked up the captain at a neighboring racecourse. Charmed with his long list of aristocratic acquaintance, his extensive travel, and his fashionable demeanor, Mrs. Nupkins and Miss Nupkins had exhibited Captain Fitzmarshall, and quoted Captain Fitzmarshall, and hurled Captain Fitzmarshall at the devoted heads of their select circle of acquaintance, until their bosom friends, Mrs. Porkenham and the Mrs. Porkenhams, and Mr. Sidney Porkenham, were ready to burst with jealousy and despair. And now, to hear, after all, that he was a needy adventurer, a strolling player, and if not a swindler, something so very like it, that it was hard to tell the difference. Heavens! What would the Porkenham say? What would be the triumph of Mr. Sidney Porkenham when he found that his addresses had been slighted for such a rival? How should he, Nupkins, meet the eye of old Porkenham at the next quarter sessions? And what a handle would it be for the opposition magisterial party if the story got abroad? But after all, apostrophe said Mr. Nupkins, brightening for a moment after a long pause, after all, this is a mere statement. Captain Fitzmarshall is a man of very engaging manners, and, I dare say, has many enemies. What proof have you of the truth of these representations? Apostrophe, apostrophe, confront me with him, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, that is all I ask, and all I require. Confront him with me, and my friends here, you will want no further proof. Apostrophe, why, apostrophe said Mr. Nupkins, that might be very easily done, for he will be here tonight, and then there would be no occasion to make the matter public, just for the young man's own sake, you know. I should like to consult Mrs. Nupkins on the propriety of the step, in the first instance, though. At all events, Mr. Pickwick, we must dispatch this legal business before we can do anything else. Pray step back into the next room. Apostrophe, into the next room they went. Grummer, apostrophe said the magistrate, in an awful voice. Your wash up, apostrophe replied Grummer, with the smile of a favorite. Come, come, sir, apostrophe said the magistrate sternly, don't let me see any of this levity here. It is very unbecoming, and I can assure you that you have very little to smile at. Was the account you gave me just now strictly true? Now be careful, sir. Apostrophe your wash up, apostrophe stammered Grummer, I apostrophe, oh, you are confused, are you? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the magistrate. Apostrophe Mr. Jinx, you observe this confusion? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly, sir, apostrophe replied Jinx. Now, apostrophe said the magistrate, repeat your statement, Grummer, and again I warn you to be careful. Mr. Jinx, take his words down. apostrophe, the unfortunate drummer proceeded to restate his complaint, but, what between Mr. Jinks taking down his words, and the magistrates taking them up, his natural tendency to rambling, and his extreme confusion, he managed to get involved, in something under 3 minutes, in such a mass of entanglement and contradiction, that Mr. Nupkins at once declared he didn't believe him. So the fines were remitted, and Mr. Jinks found a couple of bail in no time. And all these solemn proceedings having been satisfactorily concluded, Mr. Grummer was ignominiously ordered out, an awful instance of the instability of human greatness, and the uncertain tenure of great men's favor. Mrs. Nupkins was a majestic female in a pink gauze turban and a light brown wig. Miss Nupkins possessed all her mama's haughtiness without the turban, and all her ill nature without the wig. And whenever the exercise of these two amiable qualities involved mother and daughter in some unpleasant dilemma, as they not infrequently did, they both concurred in laying the blame on the shoulders of Mr. Nupkins. Accordingly, when Mr. Nupkins sought Mrs. Nupkins, and detailed the communication which had been made by Mr. Pickwick, Mrs. Nupkins suddenly recollected that she had always expected something of the kind, that she had always said it would be so, that her advice was never taken, that she really did not know what Mr. Nupkins supposed she was, and so forth. The idea. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Nupkins, forcing a tear of very scanty proportions into the corner of each eye, the idea of my being made such a fool of. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah, you may thank your papa, my dear, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nupkins. How I have implored and begged that man to inquire into the captain's family connections. How I have urged and entreated him to take some decisive step. I am quite certain nobody would believe it quite. Apostrophe, but, my dear, apostrophe, said Mr. Nupkins. Don't talk to me, you aggravating thing, don't. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nupkins. My love, apostrophe, said Mr. Nupkins, you profess yourself very fond of Captain Fitzmarshall. You have constantly asked him here, my dear, and you have lost no opportunity of introducing him elsewhere. Apostrophe, didn't I say so, Henrietta? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Nupkins, appealing to her daughter with the air of a much injured female. Didn't I say that your papa would turn round and lay all this at my door? Didn't I say so? Apostrophe, apostrophe, here Mrs. Nupkins sobbed. Oh, pa! Apostrophe, apostrophe, remonstrated Miss Nupkins. And here she sobbed too. Isn't it too much, when he has brought all this disgrace and ridicule upon us, to taunt me with being the cause of it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. Nupkins. How can we ever show ourselves in society? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Nupkins. How can we face the Porkenhams? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Nupkins. Or the Griggs? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss Nupkins. Or the Slumintokens? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Nupkins. But what does your papa care? What is it to him? Apostrophe, at this dreadful reflection, Mrs. Nupkins wept mental anguish, and Miss Nupkins followed on the same side. Mrs. Nupkins' tears continued to gush forth, with great velocity, until she had gained a little time to think the matter over, when she decided, in her own mind, that the best thing to do would be to ask Mr. Pickwick and his friends to remain until the captain's arrival, and then to give Mr. Pickwick the opportunity he sought. If it appeared that he had spoken truly, the captain could be turned out of the house without noising the matter abroad, and they could easily account to the Porkenhams for his disappearance, by saying that he had been appointed, through the court influence of his family, to the Governor Generalship of Sierra Leone, of Saugor Point, or any other of those salubrious climates which enchant Europeans so much, that when they once get there, they can hardly ever prevail upon themselves to come back again. When Mrs. Nupkins dried up her tears, Miss Nupkins dried up hers, and Mr. Nupkins was very glad to settle the matter as Mrs. Nupkins had proposed. So Mr. Pickwick and his friends, having washed off all marks of their late encounter, were introduced to the ladies, and soon afterwards to their dinner, and Mr. Weller, whom the magistrate, with his peculiar sagacity, had discovered in half an hour to be one of the finest fellows alive, was consigned to the care and guardianship of Mr. Muzzle, who was specially enjoined to take him below, and make much of him. How do you do, sir? ' said Mr. Muzzle, as he conducted Mr. Weller down the kitchen stairs. Why, no considerable change has taken place in the state of my system, since I see you cocked up behind your governor's chair in the parlor, a little while ago, replied Sam. You will excuse my not taking more notice of you then, said Mr. Muzzle. You see, Master hadn't introduced us then. Lord, how fond he is of you, Mr. Weller, to be sure. Said Sam, what a pleasant chap he is. Ain't he? Replied Mr. Muzzle. So much humor, said Sam. And such a man to speak, said Mr. Muzzle. How his ideas flow, don't they? Wonderful, replied Sam. They comes a pouring out, knocking each other's heads so fast that they seems to stun one another. You hardly know what he's arter, do you? That's the great merit of his style of speaking, rejoined Mr. Muzzle. Take care of the last step, Mr. Weller. Would you like to wash your hands, sir, before we join the ladies? Here's a sink, with the water laid on, sir, and a clean jack towel behind the door. Perhaps I may as well have a rinse, replied Mr. Weller, applying plenty of yellow soap to the towel, and rubbing away till his face shone again. How many ladies are there? Only two in our kitchen, said Mr. Muzzle, cook and douse. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.